Marcus, how's it going, man?
Who are you?
It has been a while.
I remember how to do this thing, I think.
We'll see what happens.
This will be a complete disaster, I'm sure.
That's all right.
Just like the movie. We have no plan on how we're doing these podcasts, much like David Gordon Green.
Exactly. I was like, come on, guys, really?
Hi, everybody. We'd love to get your feedback. You can post a review wherever you found this podcast. Find us on Twitter at RealDMC or send us a message at feedback@realdmc.com. If you send us some feedback, we may include it in our listener feedback section and you'll hear it on the show. Thank you for listening and now on to the episode.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Real DMC podcast. DMC stands for Dave, Marks, and Colin. What's going on, guys?
Not much. Just trying to figure out how this podcasting works again.
I was going to say, it has been a while, which is a good transition to our listener feedback, which is we received a few messages along the lines of, hey, what's going on, guys? Why did you stop your podcast? Are you guys still recording?
So are you okay?
Maybe we should address the what has been like, what is a two-month gap in our podcast? Colin, your thoughts. Why did we stop recording?
I think it's 3 months now.
I don't know.
Good. Marcus, any thoughts?
We had various things in life come up, from vacations to going back to school, sending kids to college, all sorts of various things.
So we are back, I guess. Our podcast has been reestablished, so we're going to try to get this thing going again. Life slowed us down, and we are not professional podcasters. However, if somebody is interested in paying us to do this, please send us a message, and we will definitely take a look at your offer.
Also, if you're interested in paying us to not do it, I'm open to that as well.
Well, so the very last podcast that we had published was a podcast that I did with Bill Tiller, which was a little bit of a deep dive between two people that are way into the Halloween series. So hopefully you had a chance to listen to that. We will be doing this as a bit of a two-parter. Colin, Marcus, and I are going to just go through Halloween Ends and provide our thoughts. And then we will circle back to Bill Tiller. Bill made, I think, a series of very interesting predictions. And I think if you were to watch Halloween Kills and then assume what's going to happen in Halloween Ends, a lot of those predictions felt like they were probably on the right track. However, then the movie happened and probably a lot of them ended up missing. So we'll get Bill on and he'll be able to provide his thoughts and we'll take it from there.
God, I wish Bill was here right now.
I know. It was a really good podcast between you two. I really enjoyed it. I loved his enthusiasm for the franchise and just all the insight he brought. If you haven't listened to that one's probably going to be way better than this because Bill really knows his stuff. But I think he was close to the right premise that Myers, evil has embedded himself in him and it will like leave him. And I think that is what this movie somewhat tries to cover. So it's not necessarily Michael Myers. It is just like the evil.
The evil within.
It's an external force and it just embodied him for 40 years and now it's moving on.
Yeah, what's weird about that is they set up a lot of that in Halloween Kills, and then they pull back on it in Halloween Ends, which is, I think, a very strange decision. I would say that this trilogy is very similar to the new Star Wars trilogy, is the way I would feel about it, which is just every movie kind of goes off in different directions, and you're not quite sure where it's going, and is it coherent, and did you have a full plan going into this? And I'm not sure that they did. That's my takeaway going into this. What do you guys think?
I think you're spot on. Star Wars has like a semi-excuse because they had different directors each time. These guys don't really have a good excuse. They have the same writers and directors throughout the three, and they just made a mess of all of them.
I do not think they had any sort of plan going into this. I read this interview with David Gordon Green, and now obviously like he directed all three of them, but he said that they had different writers for each of these three movies, and this was purposeful. He said they were writing them all at the same time, and then they basically kind of like tried out different things and then used what they thought worked really well at the time. I don't know that I even believe that. They did a good job with Halloween 2018, sort of the reboot, and it should have ended there.
Yeah.
Why do these other two movies?
I'll go so far as to say that I think that their original intent was to end it in Halloween 2018.
It was a great ending!
It seemed pretty final.
So the ending that they filmed originally was Laurie and Michael have a knife fight basically on the front lawn. And it says that, you know, Michael sticks his knife into Lori and basically twists it. She's dead. She's not coming back. And then Michael walks into the area where the mannequins are that Lori was shooting at. He sits down and then potentially dies. So the idea, I think, in the original 2018 was they were going to close loop it with the original and both of them were going to die and that would be it and it would be over. Unfortunately, it made $256 million on a budget of $10 million and they decided, well, we need a couple more.
I would just like to say, which I think we probably already covered on the previous podcast, that the actual filmed ending to 2018 with the fire, I think that works a whole lot better. I liked it because Lori survived. I didn't like the fact that they left it open-ended, that he could come back and he escaped that fire. But I thought just the whole trapping him was great. And then he should have just burned up in the house and then boom, it's done.
I think after Halloween, after watching it, you didn't think he was escaping that. Great wrap up. She finished him. She got him.
I think if you made this movie as a direct sequel to Halloween 2018, I think it might work slightly better. This movie actually completely invalidates Halloween Kills. That's one of the things that I think is strange about this movie in terms of the choices that it makes. Because they build up a whole bunch of stuff around supernatural mythology and the window.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that Halloween Kills actually helps this film at all. I think if Halloween Kills didn't exist and this was a direct sequel to Halloween 2018, I think it actually might work better.
I think this film does work with Halloween Kills, just not from the sort of supernatural aspect. Halloween Kills brings the whole town of Haddonfield into the equation. And now it's right. Like this whole town's been traumatized. And then in Kills, in Halloween Ends, it becomes now the whole town really was traumatized. Well, I don't really care about that. Like, I don't care about what happens to the people of Haddonfield. I mean,
you probably should be watching Halloween films then, because that's, I think a little empathy there is probably important for your enjoyment.
They didn't bring that back into Halloween Ends. Michael killed 20 people and then disappeared. That'd be huge news.
Oh, I know. I mean, you'd have the FBI and whoever else would be deployed locally to try to find this guy, right? I mean, I do have some questions as to why 2019 Halloween seems like a very casual affair in Haddonfield. I would imagine that would not be the case.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, no.
Like 1 year later, they're just like, oh, yeah, let's make some pies. I think you're right. If you didn't have Kills, Halloween 2018 ends.
And he disappears.
And he just disappears. Like maybe they go into the fire and he's not there.
They can't find the body.
Glory's like, oh, he's gone. She's kind of recovered and she like kind of moves on with her life. That would kind of make sense. He disappeared. You don't know where he is. And then that would be a lot more believable than what Kills introduced.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with you guys.
This film is not well received. In fact, I was doing some internet research earlier today. And there's a petition that's been started online, which is that they should reshoot Halloween Ends in its entirety. And there were 3,000 signatures on there so far that I saw.
Did people want more Michael Myers? He's in it very little.
People wanted a Michael Myers film. And this movie is pretty strange because, you know, he doesn't show up until, 55 minutes? No, I think, 47 minutes into it? Doesn't make his first kill until 55 minutes into it. So this is a non-Michael Myers Halloween film, which is actually pretty interesting.
Yeah, I kept thinking all throughout the movie, is this a Halloween movie? Because it didn't feel like it at all.
There's no kids trick-or-treating. There's no shots of the town. Like even on the Halloween night, they have none of this similar visuals that you get from many of the other movies, including like the remakes that they did. You don't have what you expect in a Halloween movie.
The crux of this film is supposed to be a study in the nature of evil. That's not what Halloween is about.
It's a terrible study too. Like they didn't do a good job with that.
I just kept thinking, like, why are we focusing on Corey? I don't care about Corey. Right. I care about Michael Myers. I care about Laurie Strode. That's a Halloween movie.
I do think the general population is in agreement with you, because if you look at the film series rankings, Halloween's at the top with a 7.7. That actually feels maybe a little bit low as a rating. Halloween 2018, which is 6.5, and then Halloween Ends comes in at a 5.0. People, at least on the IMDb as a rating example, are not terribly fond of Halloween Ends. And it actually ends up being, I think, 4 or 5 from the bottom, with Halloween Resurrection being the absolute lowest, which is a 3.9, which is an appropriate score because that movie absolutely is pure garbage.
Halloween, my mindset has always been like a slightly more elevated horror movie.
Yeah.
Especially for the original. It's not like the big slasher movie. It's definitely more scary. It's more intense. It definitely is not like Friday the 13th is a gory slasher movies and all the Nightmare on Elm Street diverted to that pretty quickly. The first one I thought was pretty good, scary movie. With Halloween 2018, I think they had like, okay, let's bring the original concept back. And I thought they did a pretty good job with that. Just to go so wild with the next two, just I don't even know what Ends is attempting to be because it's barely even a horror movie. It gets there to some degree, but it's just not a Halloween movie at all. It loses a lot of that tension and scariness and menace.
The original Halloween is a masterpiece. The original Halloween 2 is, I think, a very effective sequel. I know people have different opinions about that movie, primarily because Laurie gets sidelined in bed and she doesn't have an opportunity to do much. I'll say the exact same thing happens in Halloween Kills, by the way. The Jamie Lee Curtis performance in Halloween Kills is almost pointless. I mean, she has nothing to do except kind of lay in a hospital bed and do some ranting.
Let him come for me.
No.
Let him take my head as I take his.
No.
Maybe the only way he can die is if I die too.
No.
Karen, you and Allison should not have to keep running because of the darkness that I created, honey.
But then Halloween Ends is an interesting diversion of the Halloween landscape, right? It does try to do something new. It tries to do something interesting. Does it actually accomplish that? I'm not sure. The one thing that I think it fails at is establishing any kind of relevant mythology to explain why this guy would potentially pick up the mantle of the shape. Bill Tiller had a prediction saying that what they're trying to do is say that Myers is a supernatural force and the shape itself is an evil entity that can imprint itself on different people, which is kind of what they're going for here. But how they execute it in terms of Corey and his motivations and all that kind of stuff, it's pretty sloppy. That's my take on it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, for sure, they did not do the proper work to make any of that believable. It's just not there.
No, it's not there, but it's an interesting idea.
Sure.
Because you run into a problem with the fact that Michael Myers is getting old. Like, what's he, 62 or 63 in this film, he's out killing people. And he's also been living in the sewer for 4 years, and I'm not sure what he's been eating or where he's been shitting. I have lots of questions about the sewer.
He's collecting Social Security at this point. Like, he's now 67 in that sewer.
Okay, 67, okay.
How bad do you think he smells? It's got to be awful, right?
Is he always wearing the mask, or does he only put on the mask when visitors show up? I have questions.
I have many questions.
If that's what they were going for, a force that has embodied him, it's kind of like the Phoenix saga, right? Like when Phoenix takes over Jean Grey. Marvel reference, Colin.
Thanks.
I'm actually impressed that you pulled out a Marvel reference, Marcus. Good job.
Well, it's the comic books, not the movies. So yeah, if it's transferring to Corey because Myers is getting old and living in a sewer and it gets bored and it wants to like move on, they should have like covered that deeper somehow. I don't know.
Or they should have done anything to establish that that's what they were going for, right?
Maybe it's a mask what transfers that power, embodies it. Maybe that's what they were going for, and he takes the mask at one point, or I don't know.
I think all they were trying to do was to say that Michael Myers is evil incarnate. He's going to kill Corey. He recognizes something within Corey's eyes and thinks, no, I'm not going to kill him. He's like me. And then he transfers some of his evil into Corey. Now Corey's changed. And
he's an evil bro, is what you're saying?
Now he's like evil Corey. He's like evil Corey Hart, where he wears his sunglasses at night and drives on his motorcycle. But I just don't buy that at all. I don't buy that Corey actually was evil to begin with.
Yeah, I mean, they do so much work to make him wholesome. He's a babysitter at 21, and he's drinking milk.
Yeah, he's kind of a goof and stuff. And yeah, he goes through a traumatic period in his life because everyone now thinks he's a monster because he killed this kid accidentally.
That kid had it coming. We'll get to it.
To then just say like, oh, he meets Michael Myers and that's this sort of catalyst to turn him full villain and start killing people. I don't think they sold it. At least he didn't sell it to me. And everything that happened since then in terms of Corey's motivations for killing people, just it didn't work. I mean, the first two people he killed, the kid and then the homeless man, were accidents.
The homeless man was maybe self-defense. I guess you could classify it as that.
Yeah, but it's not like he set out with the intent of killing that guy. And I don't buy that now he's got a taste for it or something. I just, no.
I think the premise of Michael has always been like he is pure evil, but it's never been something that has taken over. It's not something is infecting him. This boy is just evil to the core. There's nothing good about this person.
Yeah, I like that.
It's not something that can be transferred or anything like that. It's just like this person is evil.
You can't explain it.
The whole reason why Halloween is effective is because you don't understand this individual's motive.
Yeah, like, exactly.
Why are you doing it? It's just this person out there who is this random force of malevolence. It happens to focus on a series of babysitters or teenagers and kills him. Yeah. But you don't really understand what his motive is. And there's nothing linked to this idea of him having a sister or any of that kind of stuff in the original film.
Yeah. And that makes it scarier.
Think about how the movie and the character would be so incredibly different if there was a scene right before the start of the original Halloween in which 6-year-old Michael Myers runs into some sort of entity that passes along evil to him.
Yeah.
Suddenly you have sympathy for this kid. And now you sympathize and you also know what happened and why. It loses all meaning. No, it has to be the mystery. The absolute mystery is what works. So the whole idea that this evil transfers from Michael Myers to Corey is just ludicrous.
But they also have it transferring to the whole town, right? They do that montage of death.
In the years that followed, the people of Haddonfield descended into a plague of grief, of blame, of paranoia. The suffering Michael caused became an infection, passing on to people who never even crossed his path.
I don't buy any of that either because...
Yeah, just any town though, isn't it? I mean, based on what's happening?
Yeah.
Did people in like Seattle start killing themselves because of the Green River Killer or Ted Bundy? No. It doesn't make sense to me. It really doesn't. Yeah. People who were very close to it, they would have PTSD, they'd be traumatized. But we're talking about a whole town? No, I just don't buy it.
I'm not sure that the general population is buying it either, because if you look at the financial performance, the Green Trilogy, so with the Halloween remake in 2018, that had a budget of $10 million, it made $256 million globally. So it made $159 million domestically. Now, starting with Halloween Kills, and they did this with Halloween Ends as well, they actually ended up having both those movies available on Peacock. So you can say that actually impacted the box office performance. But Halloween Kills, the global total was $132 million. And as of now, Halloween Ends, the global total is $93 million.
The streaming's weird. I paid $5 for a month of Peacock so I can watch the movie. $5 is more than I would pay if I was going to even rent it. It just seemed like a very strange model. I just bought it for 1 month, canceled it. I don't think Hollywood has figured this out yet.
Getting back to the box office, so Halloween Ends had an 80% drop-off in weekend two versus a 71% drop-off for Kills and a 58% for the 2018 Halloween.
Word got out, don't watch it. Don't bother.
So that 80% drop is one of the biggest second weekend drops of even horror movies, which are traditionally like front-loaded. It means that people are not necessarily flocking to this film or buying into the concept of this film. And I do think that if somebody is actually taking the time to start a petition online to say that you should reshoot the entire movie, maybe there's some passion out there in the fan base to say that this was the wrong direction.
I want the Snyder cut.
I think we should just all stop. Halloween's done. Halloween should have stopped in 1978 and just we hold it up as a masterpiece. I don't want to see any more fans making films, making sequels or reboots. I appreciate Rob Zombie's version now. I appreciate the 2018 reboot, but enough. Just enough. Move on to something
new.
By
the way, I just want to put it out there that I have an idea for a kick-ass sequel that totally works with this new trilogy. And so I really do. I have a great idea for the next version of Where to Take Halloween.
I would advise you to not proceed with that because it is going to fail. I'm
going to mail Kakad on this, and I'm saying I actually have an idea. It's going to, it'll work. Trust me. It's perfect.
Said David Gordon Green in 2016.
I wonder if this will be the last.
No, it's not because the rights go back to the Akkads after, so Blumhouse doesn't own the rights anymore, and they will make another movie for sure. Because it's printing money, so why wouldn't you do it?
So I just hope that they maybe give it to like a young independent filmmaker who isn't a super fan of the Halloween movies, but is a very talented, knows suspense, and can reinterpret this in such a way that it feels fresh, but impacts you the same way that the original film did.
There you go. I have it perfectly. No problem. I got it. We'll move on.
Let's talk offline because I really want to hear this now.
Critical reviews on Halloween Ends, I'd say overall, were not kind. I think it was at the Metacritic score. I think it was about 33 or 34%. To me, one of the biggest problems in this movie is they're trying to sell a relationship between Allison and Corey, and I don't think it gets there. Brian Tallarico of RogerEbert.com had the same feedback, and his quote was, "To say the love story between Corey and Allison is underwritten and unbelievable would be an understatement. It's just poorly executed in every way." And I have to say that the relationship between the two of them in this film is bizarre. And I understand that it needs to be the anchor of the film in terms of, you know, who is this guy? Is he spinning off his axis? All that kind of stuff. But I just don't think it works at all. So I think that that's actually probably the biggest failing of this movie. I don't know. Do you guys have an opinion?
Totally agree. I don't, from the very start, I did not get it. It's not believable. She asks him out at the hospital and he turns her down. He's like, what? Even her asking him out seemed bizarre. Like, okay, really? Like, she's acting all goofy in the room and all flustered. Very strange. I don't believe it at all throughout the movie.
It's 70% of the plot is this romance, this love story. And and none of it feels
believable.
Sincere.
Authentic at all.
Yeah, authentic. Did she know him before? Or did she just think he was sort of cute and like a little puppy dog?
Like, oh, that's the guy that killed the kid. He's pretty hot, though.
Yeah. Everyone hates him. So I think this is what it is that the whole town looks at him as this monster who got away, you know, got let off. She's like, he's my next project. And that's how it all comes to be. She pursues him. Why? There's nothing there. You've lost me from the get-go.
Well, and it is problematic if it takes up the first 55 minutes of the film, right? That's the other thing is that, you know, Myers does show up briefly, but it is really all about Corey. And I think if you have the Corey-Allison relationship not believable, that's a problem for this movie.
Oh, for sure. They could make it work if they did a better job with it. He's just not that likable. He's not being cute. He's not doing anything to make you...
He doesn't do a single thing to make himself more available or attractive or interesting to her.
Yeah, exactly.
But she is 100%, she's actually 150% in on him,
yeah.
Which is the very strange energy here. I guess it's fun that it's maybe a woman pursuing a man as part of this, maybe, but I'm not sure that you can justify her actions as part of this either.
I agree.
She's a nurse. It's a Florence Nightingale syndrome.
I don't know. Just seems weird.
Casting call.
I do think that Jamie Lee Curtis is pretty good here. It's a really good performance. I like seeing her. She owns all of the bullshit that they make her say, I guess.
You know, you need to find someone that can let go, that makes you want to rip off your shirt and show grief your fucking tits and say, you know what? Let's go.
I don't understand some of the dialogue choices. Was it to be kind of funny or was it just clunkily written? I don't know. But I do think that Jamie Lee Curtis as Laurie is really good here. Certainly far, far better than what she was given to do in Halloween Kills.
I think she's fine. As an actress, I think it's fine. I think all the material is just weird. I did not like the voiceover. It's nothing against Jamie Lee Curtis. I think it's just the writing.
Whenever you employ a team of writers on a film, you're just asking for trouble. Jamie Lee Curtis is a bright point in the movie. But yeah, she doesn't have a lot to work with. But what she does have, like, you know, the attempted suicide scene, I thought was good. And she's always good as Laurie. That's pretty much all I have to say.
Her Laurie in this trilogy is a much better Laurie than her Laurie in, say, Halloween H2O, which you guys probably haven't seen in a long time. So
that is true.
You probably can't make a judgment call. I understand.
I'll just go ahead and agree with that.
Okay. I'll wait to have that conversation with Bill Tiller when we do the follow-up for this. I think she inhabits the Laurie character quite comfortably.
I think the hard part, though, for me is the turns that her character takes throughout the three movies. The first one, she's just like alcoholic recluse.
Sarah Connor, by the way. Alcoholic recluse Sarah Connor, specifically.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Prepper. I forgot the prepper part. And then the next one, she's just like paranoid. And then this one, everything's great. she's making pumpkin pies. Would she ever buy Halloween decorations? Like, would she decorate her house? I did not get any of that. This is not the same character that was in
right
4 years ago. Like, I just don't. None of it makes sense.
By the way, Dave, I just figured out your sequel premise. It's the one where Laurie is this, you know, doomsday prepper and all of this, right? The whole Sarah Connor thing. And then Michael Myers comes after her. And when he's about to kill her, he goes, come with me if you want to live. And he does a 180. Now he's like, he's there to save her.
All right. So getting back to the cast. So Andy Matichak is Allison. Here's the thing. I don't know how to judge the Allison and Corey performances in this film, honestly, because I'm not sure how much of it was the actors versus the material. Allison in this film as a character is manic. All over the place, her obsessive attachment to Corey with no real justification doesn't make a ton of sense to me. She's just playing this a bit big, I guess, is what it comes down to.
Well, for sure. I mean, when the scene in the diner...
Just burn it all to the ground.
I'll light the match.
Where did that come from? I don't understand.
Exactly.
I really don't understand that. I blame the writing. I like Andy Matichak. She's good in this. I mean, I have no complaints. I do have complaints with Rowan Campbell, who plays Corey. I think you needed a really good actor to come close to pulling off what they were trying to pull off with Corey, and it just did not work. It goes from like meek to James Dean.
It's the complete Arnie Cunningham cycle from Christine, if you guys are familiar with that.
Yeah. A little bit, yeah.
Or the Bud Fox from Wall Street, where, you know, he transitions to the guy with the slick back hair and all that kind of stuff. There's definitely a inflection point in terms of his character becoming meek to a badass and all that.
Bud Fox never stabs a homeless guy, though.
Well, I guess the question is, does he ever evolve Corey to be this person that Allison would be attracted to? That's the thing that doesn't really work for me. He sells the kind of, you know, the naivete and all that of the initial opening scene.
Yeah.
But beyond that, the transition to being kind of a badass, which just really involves not having your glasses on, I guess. I'm not quite sure it works.
She likes him at the, he's still like very meek because like he just got beat up by the band. The band.
Oh geeks. God, we're going to get to that.
Don't get me started on them.
But like, so he's still like rather meek at that point, right? He hasn't transformed. And then he does this transformation. He's like, he gets the motorcycle going and he does become this James Dean-ish character. But she already was falling for him before he even like did this transformation. I don't know.
He's already kind of meek to begin with. And then now he kills this kid accidentally. Everyone in the town is against him. He's an outcast, right? And has been that way for 3 years. And he's kind of traumatized by that. Here's a girl who takes an interest. And for whatever reason, again, I think she sees him as a project, someone she can nurture. Maybe that's the motivation. And then he runs into Michael Myers and he survives. And maybe that just gets him what he needs. He's like, oh, my life can be better than it has been for the last 3 years. I got to kill people, but I feel a lot better. And I got this smoking chick and she likes me for who I am. And if I get on a motorcycle, she's going to think I'm even cooler.
I think that's my problem with this. So let's assume this guy has had a really shitty life in Haddonfield. So first of all, why do you stay in Haddonfield in this particular scenario, right? Why don't you move to San Diego like a week after you get out of prison or yeah, whatever happens in terms of the... I do have some questions around the sentencing, by the way. So then Allison shows up, again, smoking hot chick. He has his motorcycle. Why not just drive out of town? Why do you have to stop and murder everybody? Like, I don't really understand.
Yes.
What is it? What's it doing for you? It's like, oh yeah, the murder is really helping my confidence. I know. It's like, so come on, man.
There's this scene we're going to talk about it later, I'm sure. But he drops her off at home, and she invites him upstairs, and he's like, nah. He's like, another time. And then he like rides off on his motorcycle.
I gotta go kill some people.
Or he goes and he like gets the mask from Michael or whatever. And then they show the next shot is him like riding away. And she's on the back of the motorcycle holding onto him. And I was like, I half expected it to be Michael on the back of the motorcycle holding onto him. Like, it was like this love story is actually like him and Michael Myers. It would have been fantastic.
All right. Well, just quickly to round out the cast. So Will Patton does show up here as Frank. And I like Will Patton. You and I, or at least Colin and I, have talked about you know, what's the immediate movie you think of when you think of Will Patton? Colin, what is it?
No, I don't remember.
It's No Way Out.
Of course, yes. No Way Out.
Yes. Will Patton and Jamie Lee Curtis have some decent chemistry between the two of them. But Will Patton, he's just walking through grocery stores, not doing much.
He's very zen.
Yeah, he's a very zen individual in this movie. That's a good call, actually. Very strange.
The cherry blossoms and the Japanese language instruction have really impacted him. He's found his chi.
All right, well, anybody else from the cast you guys want to touch on?
Not really.
Opening questions.
Let me ask you this. What are you guys looking for in a Halloween movie at this point?
Having Michael Myers in more than 12 minutes would be a good start.
If they had to make a remake, I'd want something lower key, like you, not a ton of murders. You want high suspense. I would just stop making them, really.
I have to agree with you on that, but I'll play along. You definitely have to have high suspense, like you said, Marcus. I mean, that's what makes the first movie work. I would not have, quote unquote, Michael Myers in the movie because it's worn out.
It doesn't work anymore because of his age, right? You just can't justify. I mean, at some point, are you going to have like an 87-year-old Michael Myers limping through the rest home and killing other residents?
I mean,
you could do a Michael Myers movie that took place in 1980. In fact, I would set it in that era because, you know, I love a good period film.
The 80s now?
The 80s?
You've got to utilize the same mystery, but do it with someone else. Or maybe it's a little tangential. And I just think Michael Myers is worn out.
Well, they have made 12 movies, so perhaps he is worn out.
Here's the danger. When you start asking these kinds of questions, you end up with Rob Zombie's version, right?
Yeah.
I think in spirit, I liked the movie, but where it fails, you try to explain how Michael Myers became Michael Myers. And that sort of ruins the mystique.
With the zombie version, I think that he was more interested in talking about Myers as a kid and then felt compelled to try to redo the original Halloween. So the last half of that movie is a weird, compressed 45-minute version of the original Halloween.
Right. But that's the problem, is that you end up going down that road and that's what you get. I think as a movie, it's pretty good. It's just that it's not Halloween because it doesn't have the mystery. Now, it's like, I know why he's the way he is. I have a little bit of sympathy for him. That's the problem. I don't think you can do it. What do I want from a Halloween movie is no more movies.
I want it to be scary, filled with tension, and I don't need the gore overload or any of that kind of stuff. But if you're going to do something in this space, have it be creepy, tension-filled. And again, that's why I have the perfect idea, but we'll talk about that later.
Okay, but let me ask you this. Can you accomplish that with Michael Myers, knowing that there's too much Michael Myers now?
No, the answer to that is no. So the question is, how do you jump it to something that is at a different place? And I think I have the answer.
It's Mitchell Miller, who lives in Haydenburg, and he wears a Spock mask.
All right, well, let me ask you another question, which is, do you think that this film is shot within the concept that it's within our existing universe? And the reason why I ask that is because the dialogue that people use in this film, and by the way, in Halloween Kills as well, it does not sound as if normal human beings are saying these words.
You know, there are two kinds of evil. There's the evil that exists as an external force that threatens the well-being of the tribe. Survival depends on understanding and awareness and fear of physical threat to our daily lives. The other kind of evil lives inside us, like a sickness or an infection. It's more dangerous because we may not know we're infected.
I think that Lori's been hitting the medical marijuana a little too much.
Yeah, no, it definitely sounds like you have multiple writers and someone came up with a good line and like, I definitely want to put this in the movie, and they just throw it in there and it just doesn't necessarily fit or make any sense.
I guess my question honestly was, is this just kind of weird writing, or are they specifically going for some level of subtle humor based on the characters using this over stylized dialogue?
I might make the case that this was more attempt at humor. There are some attempts at humor. So
no, I think there's some dark humor in Halloween Ends for sure.
Yeah. I don't know if they're just goofing on people or just think it's funny themselves. I don't think it's necessarily works, depending on what kind of movie you're making. I don't think they're making a parody.
I guess my last question is, this movie jumps ahead 4 years in the timeline. Why? Halloween, Halloween Kills, both of those are occurring on the same night. This all of a sudden makes a 4-year time jump. And as I understand it, the original plan for this was to actually have all three movies be on the same night, but they ended up altering that. So why the 4-year time jump? Any immediate thoughts? I'm asking this honestly as a curiosity.
I think maybe you had to have some amount of time between Corey being arrested and he can become an outsider by being ostracized because everyone looks at him like he's a monster. And that's the only way I can explain how he maybe gets to the point where he's traumatized enough to be able to turn into a killer.
Did Corey have to kill the kid after Michael Myers, after 2018? Can he kill the kid 2 years prior, 3 years prior, 4 years? Why move everyone else's timeline around to appease Corey?
I think it's because Corey's mom says like he sort of becomes this scapegoat. Now there's an evil vacuum in the town because Michael Myers is gone. So now Corey has to fill that vacuum.
All right. Well, shall we jump into this thing and talk about a few scenes?
Sure.
Yeah.
All right.
Such enthusiasm.
Play until 8:30, 8:45. Then you should go to bed.
Easy money.
Yes. Gonna come play with me or what?
That sounds like a threat.
It's Halloween. We're gonna have a good time tonight.
First scene, I think it's a pretty good scene. I mean, I think this is maybe the best scene in the movie. I don't know. More specifically, I think it does a good job of setting tension. I think that the tension in this scene is better than the entire rest of the movie. That's just my quick take on it.
I totally agree. This scene was great. I really enjoyed it. I bought right in. You were scared when the kid disappears.
Right.
They were talking about, oh, Michael Myers doesn't kill kids. He kills babysitters. So there's a couple of interesting lines in there. So they were set up Corey as this like wholesome character. He's 21. There's a beer in the fridge, but he chooses chocolate milk. And then the accidental death is just fantastic. It works so well.
It was shocking.
Yeah, you did not expect it. You're like, holy crap. I thought it really, really worked. The opening scene is super strong, and then it just goes off a cliff.
Peters out. Yeah. Then it becomes a romance.
Yeah.
I liked little homages, like they're watching John Carpenter's The Thing on TV, which was nice.
The Thing in 1978, right? Yeah.
Exactly.
The mom says, no TV or whatever, no scary movies. If it's a 6 or 7-year-old kid, the movie that you're going to show them is The Thing. I mean, if anyone's familiar with that movie, I mean, that's a pretty deep dive into some pretty gross sci-fi. Fantastic movie, by the way. Amazing movie.
Hey, Dave, how old were you when you watched Halloween?
Let's see. I would have been 8.
Okay. I think you just answered your own question.
And I'm not saying that he actually shouldn't have been watching the movie. I just thought that if you're going to maybe put a thumb in mom's eye to say, no scary movies. Oh, here's one. Maybe American Werewolf in London wasn't available, Colin. Maybe that's the problem.
I think so. Well, yeah, again, yeah. Jeremy wanted to watch the movie. And I don't know what Corey was thinking, but ultimately he was like, you can't watch this movie. This is getting a little out of control.
One thing I really liked about the scene too is the score is very minimalist, which I think works really well. When the kid starts setting up the prank, he's in the background, you see him move with the shadow, there are a few small musical cues, but otherwise it's pretty much no music. And I really think that works well. I think this opening scene is really well done.
I think we can all agree on that, and I think we can all agree that little Jeremy's a little prick.
We play hide and seek before bed. Your parents are going to be home soon.
I don't want to play no hide and seek. Stupid. I want to watch this movie. And I don't really feel like pretending to be best friends with an ugly ass boy babysitter. You suck at babysitting.
Yeah, I went so far in my notes as to say the little asshole deserved it. So that's what I said. I mean, it is pretty shocking to end up with the kid with his melon crushed on the floor and the blood spreading out and all that whole thing, right? So that's like, oh, okay. That's a pretty shocking intro for the Halloween film for sure.
Oh, yeah. It's great. And Corey, he is just freaking out way too much. You know it's a prank.
I think he was like panicking, like, what's this kid going to do? Is he going to hurt himself? and I'm going to be blamed for it or something like that.
The one thing that I would say that I think is done somewhat effectively is this idea that Myers was this killer on Halloween. He's still out there, so the door is open. So this idea that there could be this person somewhere in the community that is killing people.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I think that helps raise the tensions. Or this idea that what Myers did translated to Haddonfield being on high alert, it's kind of everybody being on edge. I think that actually works here in the beginning. Maybe the one thing of kills that gets pulled into this that I think works is just kind of the number of people that he killed and the tension that he created.
All that really works until you realize, well, Corey should have realized, that Jeremy was playing a prank on him. And then it should have been, all right, open the door.
Okay, let me out of the closet, you dipshit.
Exactly. Yeah.
After the kid goes over and hits the floor, you see Jeremy leaning over the railing at the top of the stairs. And that is an exact copy of what happened when the shape actually was leaning over and looking at Lori falling in the original Halloween. And that is something that occurs in this movie repeatedly, is this idea of actually creating moments that are close to the original or somehow have a callback to the original. And I don't think that inherently mimicking the action creates some sort of a
connection or something.
This idea of, oh, I recognize that, so it's cool. I think that's a problem in this movie.
Fan service.
If you were the mayor of Haddonfield,
yep.
Would you just cancel Halloween, wouldn't you?
So Myers killed like 31 people or whatever, you know, on the previous Halloween.
Yeah,
and 2019 Halloween rolls around. Kids are just out on the street trick-or-treating, having a good time. Like, really? Is that really going to happen? I mean, if this maniac is out there and you don't know where he is, are you really going to just allow Halloween to go forward?
Yes.
I don't know.
Come on, guys. The mayor of Amity didn't close the beaches on July 4th.
Look, we depend on the summer people here for our very lives.
Larry, we have to close the beaches.
And we all know how that turned out. You know, pour one out for Alex Kittner.
Poor Alex Kittner.
Well, moving forward. So one thing that I thought was actually really interesting, when the title credits come up, it's the same font as Halloween 3. If you're familiar with the history of Halloween 3, that was a Myerless Halloween. Fans rebelled. It was a big deal. I think that actually is sending a message saying, okay, well, we're letting people know that this is going to be a Myerless film. I don't know. I thought that was pretty interesting. You guys probably didn't pick up on that.
I did not pick up on it, no. However,
yeah.
Makes perfect sense now because, again, in Halloween 2, what happens with Lori, like you pointed out earlier? She spends most of the time in her hospital bed, right? It's like they're doing this on purpose. Okay, I get it. Maybe you're having a laugh and stuff. It went over my head. Does it serve a purpose other than being fan service? I don't think it does.
So I picked up on it, right? So, oh, I recognize that font. That's an interesting little Easter egg. And then I guess I can interpret the font to say, okay, well, Halloween 3 was a Myerless Halloween film, so maybe we should expect to receive less Myers in this film. It's a weird little decision, and I guess I'm just curious as to why they did it, and I don't know.
I'm hoping it was sort of an afterthought. Oh, hey, you know what? This movie doesn't have a lot of Michael Myers in it, and neither did Halloween 3. Well, maybe we should have a little fun with that. I hope it wasn't on purpose to say, we're not going to have Michael Myers in this because Halloween 3 didn't. That would be just a dumb decision. I will say that this film does a good job, like the first film, 2018's, of the cut from sort of the chaos going on to the music and the credits.
Yeah.
That was good. It gave me chills.
The mom screaming.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Looking up and seeing him, and then it cuts. Because after that, they show like what I was calling the death montage. Show a couple like shot in a car. There was like a suicide and a couple other things going on. Is this Michael's evil escaping into Haddonfield? I don't understand what the purpose of this montage was and what they're trying to say about it. Is this the main message of the movie?
I do think Halloween Kills was kind of setting this up this idea that maybe Myers or the Shape was its own evil entity and it had its own progression. But I don't think they pay off any of that here. I would say the very end of Halloween Ends completely undercuts the idea that there's anything supernatural or evil happening at all. So yeah. It's sort of strange that the direction they take, because Halloween Kills in my mind leans pretty far into that. And then you get to this and it's leaning pretty far the opposite direction.
Corey's mom talks about that too, about the evil and people need to blame.
No, fucking Corey's mom is a horrible character in this movie.
It's a similar confusing message. What are you saying? People need to blame a scapegoat for evil? I don't have an evil vacuum. I need to like blame evil on somebody.
There are a couple themes in this movie that run throughout the entire movie that don't make sense to me. So one is that somehow Lori is responsible for what Michael Myers did.
Oh, I know.
teasing her and saying that, oh, you created
it's
this
your
guy.
Fault.
I'm sorry. I don't understand.
Do you see what he did to my sister? He killed her husband. He stabbed her. Took her voice. She cannot speak because of you. You were her neighbor. And you don't even know her name, do you? You tempted and you provoked that man when you should have left him alone.
And even if you look at 2018, that's not the case.
Yeah.
He was captured. He was on a bus. He was let loose by Sartain. She had nothing to do with it. It doesn't make any sense.
It made no sense at all. I agree with you 100%.
One thing that baffles me throughout, and it happens throughout the movie, everybody knows exactly everybody's story. Like anywhere you go, they know, Right. Oh, I know Corey. I know exactly who you are. And then Lori, I know your story. All the past history immediately. It's just kind of bizarre.
I can barely tell you the names of the kids that live on my street.
Yeah, exactly. Just seems so bizarre.
I think part of the problem with that is that, you know, Haddonfield, you had this question, like how big is Haddonfield?
Yeah.
I feel like it's too big. For any of this to feel like it has any authenticity, it should be this very small town.
Yeah, 4,000 people or something.
Yeah. And like...
Oh, that's interesting, because I was thinking it was more like in the 60,000 to 70,000 range.
Yeah, that's what I think it is. Because it has its own hospital, radio station, all this other stuff.
Right.
So I think it is like 30, 40, 50,000 people.
Yeah.
But then it doesn't work. Like, how are you running across the same people every single
exactly.
day?
Exactly. Like,
right.
It should be much smaller. It should be, you know, out in the boonies and isolated.
It should be like the one street. Downtown, get single strip, then it would make sense.
So then you get to the Lori introduction. They show her both baking and knitting. Could you take two more? I don't know what's the word I'm looking for in terms
domestic.
Of what was that
domestic
attributes or whatever, and amp them up for the point of saying, oh, you know, she's wholesome and everything is good and normal. But just to recap this, Michael Myers almost kills her in 1978. And she spends 40 years building a fortified compound, learning to shoot and all that kind of stuff. Then Michael Myers comes back in 2018, kills 31 people, including her daughter. And she's like, nah, I'm good. She's like, I'm just gonna buy a house in town and I want to live my life and have a good time.
Yeah, put up Halloween decorations.
Yeah, that feels hard to square in my mind, actually, honestly. I don't quite understand that.
That was a huge question in my book. How come... her daughter now being killed, how does that transform her into being like okay with this all? It doesn't make any sense.
Well, Michael Myers is still out there somewhere. That's cool.
So she was doomsday prepping when he was locked up in prison.
Yeah.
And now right. that he's on the loose, she's whatever. I'll keep a door. It's a small town. I keep my door unlocked.
Seems like maybe you want to go for the opposite approach, don't you think?
I think they try to explain it because I'm just trying to live my life for my granddaughter or something. Really bad.
It's strange. And then you have Lori who's writing the book, which is actually a mechanism to deliver voiceover at various points in the movie.
Yeah. Hate it. Did you guys like the voiceover? Or did it work at all for you?
No, it didn't work.
I think the problem with the voiceover is she's saying a bunch of things that are vague and somewhat esoteric and, you know, kind of like... evil is among all of us, but sometimes it's never there. what the fuck are you talking about?
In other
about,
words, right? This is what the movie is about.
I didn't like it. Not a fan. I'm not reading that book.
Corey is reintroduced. He's working in the scrapyard, and then he goes to a convenience store, and apparently is still interested in drinking chocolate milk for whatever reason. I'm not sure that they needed to keep that theme going, but... he is attacked by a group of band dorks from high school. So he's a 21-year-old man.
Now he'd be like 23 or 24, right? He was 21 when he babysit.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. So it's 20. He's 24. And by the way, he's a good 4 or 5 inches over the guy that's threatening him at any time. Of all the things in this movie, these are the antagonists.
Look, here's the deal, man. We're seniors, okay? We've been practicing for a show the whole year, you know. Loading up for tonight's game, and we're in the fucking marshes, man. We were just hoping you could be a cool new friend, you know? Fire us a couple of six-packs.
Four band dorks? It's a fucking terrible decision for this. I mean, because it makes Corey seem... It's bizarre.
Dude, we've been marching all day. I need a brewski. Come on. So bad.
Hey, man, buy me some beer. Sorry, I can't do that. What? Not even a no thank you? Like, what? Oh my God. And the kid with the horrible haircut? Really? Look in the mirror, dude.
All I can say is, you know, I'm not the biggest guy, but in that situation, I'm putting at least one of those guys in the hospital before I go down.
Yeah.
That's I mean, come on.
It's just horrible.
It's a really bad decision because the idea that these guys are the antagonist for Corey and it's what pushes him over to the edge to evil to like kill a bunch of people. The band gang members don't quite pull it off. Don't pull off the menace in my mind.
Maybe that's what they were going for. Corey's life is so bad. He's being bullied by the kids who are usually the ones being bullied. That's how bad it's gotten.
Again, it's an opportunity. Are they just goofing? Because obviously you'd pick the football team or someone like that.
I kind of want to blame Danny McBride because I feel like he's inserted his own opinion on certain things that they should be funny. I don't want a comic Halloween version. I want it to be serious and suspenseful.
Yeah.
Or at least sell the humor in a way that it lands humorously.
Yeah, at least be funny.
Yeah. So then there's this big scene where, you know, Corey's holding a glass bottle and he's so frustrated by the bullies that he squeezes it and he breaks it in his hand, which I guess that shows some level of your superhuman strength. Do you guys think that could crush a glass bottle in your hand? Have you tried?
I could. Not even probably. Close.
Yeah.
Maybe if I smash it against my noggin. I kept expecting Corey to look up and his eyes are green and he's like, don't make me angry.
So Laurie takes him to the hospital and Allison appears to be immediately drawn to him. Is it the hangdog look? Is it the dopey face? Is it the glasses? Like, what is it that really makes Corey a world beater for Allison?
I have no idea.
Honestly, I think that's all it. And she's like, oh, he's the kid who killed the kid. I'm the only one in town who believes he's innocent. And yeah, with those puppy dog eyes and the floppy brown hair, she's got a thing for that kind of look. He's probably easy. I mean, look at the kind of talent they have in Haddonfield. She went out with Doug, the deputy, and that guy's a total tool. So
yeah, Doug seems like a tool. I will agree with you on that.
I don't think there's a lot of like really great single men out there in Haddonfield.
This is an example of where human beings are not talking or behaving correctly. She knocks over the tray and the doctor, you know, freaks out and says something. And then he says,
I'm so sorry.
It's like a mess. Just clean it up and get a goddamn sterile kit and give him a tetanus shot.
You shouldn't let that guy talk to you like that. It's going to make you sad, even if you don't think it does.
No one's ever said that line in real life. That doesn't happen. The fucking dialogue in this movie, it's not as bad as Halloween Kills, but there are moments where it's pretty bad. What's the motivation of the character? Why are you saying this thing that you're saying? It's very strange.
Again, not authentic. Just doesn't feel natural.
No, it's totally inauthentic. And the other thing is that she says, oh, my car's rattling. And he must be a mechanical savant because he says, oh, that's definitely your muffler. He knows immediately exactly what the problem is with the car.
Yeah.
He was going to go to engineering school, so duh.
By the way, the other thing I noticed when they go out to the parking lot, there's a quick shot, I don't know if you guys noticed this, but of the radio tower. They linger on the radio tower in the parking lot for a couple seconds. What is up with the fucking radio tower in this movie?
They open up the movie with the radio message too, the DJ talking right. over it, and they have a couple other scenes. Now, it's interesting, and I forget if Bill picked up on it through clues in Halloween Kills.
He did, actually. So Bill mentioned this because the Halloween towers get shown, or I'm sorry, the radio towers get shown multiple times over the course of the movie.
Yeah, so he was thinking there's a big connection. I didn't quite get the whole radio station tie-in. Maybe like it connects the town together or like, I don't know.
Setting it up for, hey, we're going to focus on the DJ in Halloween Ends. Great.
Why?
For what purpose?
Yeah, he didn't really add much. Aside from being a cool kill, he didn't add much.
I don't even know it was a cool kill, actually. I think it was stretching it, but we'll talk about that when we get there.
It was certainly disgusting.
Then you cut back to Corey's home life, and I have a question about Corey's mom. Who is Corey's mom as a character and entity? Because she's definitely off her rocker.
She's overbearing. She mothers him, way mothers him. And she's got a little bit of Dirk Diggler's mom in her.
What the hell are you doing? Who's that calling you under the dinner table?
Mama.
Who's that person you're texting?
It's Mama.
Boys who keep secrets don't get cut. blasted for dessert.
Okay. I mean,
yeah.
He's a 24-year-old man.
Yeah. Well, I think this is also trying to explain a way why Corey is who he is, why he seems like such a pussy. He's a grown man. He seems to act like a little boy.
So are you thinking this is a nature versus nurture commentary?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Okay. And which way does mom push him?
Towards the serial killer path, I guess, is what they're insinuating.
That's fair. Okay.
And yet his father, or maybe it's his stepfather, see, he's a very nice man. I was sad to see him shot. I don't think that's actually his father.
No, I think it's his stepfather.
I'm sure his father probably left a long time ago.
I think it's later in the movie. The mom's like yelling at Corey a bunch. And then the dad's like sitting there on his sofa chair.
Find love where you can.
I hope you find love.
Well, so here's my problem. They set up Corey's mom a little bit. Just a little bit.
And then he kills her.
And then he kills her later. Yeah. They could have done a lot more. They just sort of hinted at things. If they really wanted to pull it off, they would have really delved into that a lot more.
Well, why not just dial the mom down a bit?
They made it a bit comedic.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't even know comedic. Just grating, I guess, is how I would describe it.
It didn't work. There is a movie here. I think there's a kernel of a movie here. They're just not good enough to pull it off.
So then it cuts to a scene in the store where she goes out to the parking lot, and this is the start of a repeated theme in this movie, which is that Laurie is somehow responsible for Michael Myers. It seems so strange that they try to bend the idea that Haddonfield in general somehow holds Laurie responsible for Michael Myers. I don't know that you can achieve that within kind of the Halloween universe.
Yeah, you'd have to connect them closer somehow. I mean, the whole point of the second one, right, of Kills, was to say that there is no connection. It was just a random event.
Exactly. Yeah. He was trying to go home, I guess, right? That was his thing in Kills.
Yeah.
I think what it says is that the townspeople are basically, they're scapegoating Laurie. They're scapegoating Corey. Haddonfield's just full of a bunch of assholes.
If somebody was attacked and they got away, are you ever going to say that that person somehow incited the attack?
I don't believe it. I don't buy it, but I think that's what they're going for.
Allison finds Corey attractive, pursues him, gets him to go to a Halloween party. The party in this bar is very active. That's how I would describe it. Because at one point you have Corey down on the ground doing the worm. A lot of the parties I've been to over the course of my life, none of them actually reflect what I see on screen in films in terms of the level of intensity for the party. So maybe I just haven't been to the right parties, I guess.
Can you imagine how many people have spilled their beer dancing on that dance floor and now he's like writhing around on it?
Exactly.
But then again, Corey doesn't really get out too much, so.
That's the problem in this movie. So if you assume that you have to have a believable relationship between Corey and Allison that kind of hooks the whole thing together, do Allison or Corey's actions over the course of what's happening in the bar in any way seem realistic, or is it all way big the entire time? Because that's the way it feels to me.
If Allison was 16 or 17 and Corey was older and cooler, I could maybe believe it, but no, they're both 24 years old.
Yeah, you're kind of past this shit at this point, don't you think, for the most part?
For the most part, yeah.
It's a strange relationship to be the anchor for this movie. It doesn't feel authentic, and I think it suffers for it. Corey has to leave because he's accosted by the mom.
And she ruined it. It's just too bad that the mother of the kid that you accidentally killed, it shows up at the same bar that you're at. Party killer!
Tough luck, Corey.
That's the small town Haddonfield again.
After Corey leaves, the band kids roll up on him again. And one of the things that you hear them say is that, why are they going to mess with him? Because he fucked up the LeBaron, the Chrysler LeBaron. There's a massive problem with this idea that the band kids are the evil guys in this movie that push Corey over the edge, because they literally do push him over the edge. In this case, they throw him off of an overpass. Yeah, I don't buy the bad kids in this movie for one second. It just does not work for me.
Yeah,
I'm starting to think that Danny McBride might have been a band kid in high school. I blame Danny McBride for everything that's wrong with these movies.
This is where he first meets Myers. It's an interesting decision to not have Michael Myers show up in the movie until you're 40 minutes into it. Corey goes in there, Michael Myers is there, and then he grabs him and he looks in his eye, and then he says, okay, well, I'm going to let you go. none of this is in any way, even within horror movie universes, plausibly explained. That's the problem. What's the mythology? What's happening? You know, why don't you think like Corey would just run out of the drain pipe and go, holy fuck, Michael Myers is in there. Let's call the police. And then he'd be a hero and then people would be off his back. And then boy, the way, you know, movie ends, right? I just, what's Myers been eating? Is he wearing the mask every day? I have many questions here.
I don't understand the whole living in the sewers. It doesn't make any sense. Why wait 4 years then too? Like if you just have him living in the sewers, why? How come he hasn't killed then in the last 4 years?
What they're probably trying to go for is that, so he's living in the sewers, right? Occasionally he'll come out and he'll kill someone.
He pulls people in.
He lives off of this pure evil and killing instinct. I do have a question. Does he eat those people or not? I don't know, because that was my main question is, what's he eating? But I think they're just trying to say the guy is sustained by evil. He is in a weakened state. And then when he does kill the deputy, it's like he's suddenly energized and he's feeding off the murder.
Before he goes off the bridge, in the background is a big billboard of like Megan disappeared on.
Missing.
Oh, it's 100% that. They talked about it a couple times. Oh, people gone missing. Well, that's why. Dave, to your point, why haven't people been going, wait, how come all these people are missing? And
right.
Who was it that just sort of disappeared 4 years ago?
Yeah.
Michael Myers. Do you think they could be related?
You know what? If we're searching the town, what about that whole underground, surprisingly large sewer complex? Should we go take a look in there maybe? I don't
know. Nah. Yeah. It smells.
It's implausible is what it is.
I find this movie frustrating because I think that there's an interesting idea of where they could have taken it. The concept of the shape inhabiting somebody as a force of evil, that it could be transferred to somebody else and that kind of thing. But in this case, Myers almost kills him, but then looks in his eye, you know, and does the head tilt, which is like, man, there's so many fucking callbacks in this movie to the earlier Halloween stuff that, you know, you almost break your back bending over backwards to fit all them in. But I know what they were going for, but if you're watching the film, does any of it actually get communicated effectively?
No.
Why the evil would spread to Corey?
No.
Yeah, and that's the core problem of why this movie fails.
Because even at this point, Corey's still like a wholesome kind of good kid. Why would Michael see evil in him? He hasn't done anything wrong.
Right. He's pathetic, but that's it. He's not evil. He's just pathetic.
And Michael wouldn't relate to that because he was whatever he was, an 8-year-old boy when he killed his sister. Michael wasn't a wholesome boy. He wasn't like, oh, I see you and me. There's not that connection. I don't get it. Okay, Michael got attacked by the town 4 years ago. And he's recovering, but then like the 4 years seems like a very weird time period.
Well, I think 4 years was because there was the 2018 version and they just wanted to bring it up into 2022. They were tired of, hey, did anyone check the date on that? It's going to be on screen.
Maybe they just wanted to jump COVID, honestly. That might be what it is.
Well, that was the other thing I was thinking was that people killing themselves and suicides, well, maybe a byproduct of the pandemic. But honestly, who cares?
They could skip all the dates too and not even focus on any of that.
Yeah. From here forward, the problem with the movie is that you just don't buy Corey's motivation to do what he does. And that becomes the big problem with this movie. He has the encounter with Michael, and then he goes over to see Allison, and they have him standing by the hedge, right? Which is an exact callback to the first Halloween. But why is he going to be standing by the hedge? Why is he looking at the house? I mean, there's nothing that establishes any kind of realistic connection to... I mean, the original Halloween, right? It's like, who knows what Myers' motivation was? He was just a nutcase that escaped. For me, one of the problems with this movie is it's just, hey, I remember that does not mean that that is good.
Yeah.
And that's a bit of a failed theme, I think, throughout this entire new trilogy. Yes, it's kind of cool that there are characters you remember, there are scenes you remember, but just because you're recognizing it, is it actually important to the plot? I don't know.
I totally agree. To me, it just smacks of fan service. Do you think Laurie was transported back to that day 40 years before when she saw Michael Myers standing outside of her room? No, I don't think so.
Well, let me ask you this. Do you think Corey has a supernatural energy to him in this movie? Is that the intent?
I think that's the intent, but it's not earned.
Well, let me ask it a different way then. Do you think that the intent is that Laurie is supposed to recognize that there is a shape-esque evil that's forming in Corey.
Yes,
She even says it too. Like she looks into his eyes.
I don't think that's earned. How is that earned? It's only earned if now she feels it all of a sudden. But as the viewer, You can't get that. You don't get that at all. It doesn't work for me. It just doesn't work.
Would it work better if Corey wasn't this innocent? Let's say you go back to the opening scene. He actually kills the kid on purpose somehow.
If there were questions about what actually happened,
yeah,
then I would say, oh, okay. Well, maybe there's something there.
Maybe there is a dark side to Corey. Maybe he did actually kill him or something.
Exactly.
They made it very clear it was an accident. And they kept this wholesome character.
Maybe that's a mistake.
If they had this evil in him, then like when he comes across Myers, maybe he could have transferred the mask to him. And that mask is what he wears. And then that transfers the evil to him somehow. Don't have the 4-year gap. Myers is weakened by the fight with the mob last time. You'd have to rewrite a lot of this. So, like it wouldn't quite work.
You might be coming with a better idea of how to move the story forward.
But then the mask becomes the evil. And then it kind of works. If you have the mask and you're evil, you get supernatural power out of it.
What I was sort of expecting was that it was going to be creating a new Michael Myers. But that's not what happened. And Corey, as Michael Myers, failed miserably as a serial killer, I think.
Right. And then Michael ends up killing him ultimately, right? That's the thing that is kind of like, okay, well, I guess you're my failed apprentice. So Mr. Padawan, you get an F. Killed.
But also, I would have sort of expected that if you transferred your evil power to Corey, then Michael would have just died at that point, right? But apparently, he just gave him a little bit. He gave him a little bit of his evilness.
Corey's motivations in this film are just so problematic. None of his actions in any way make any sense whatsoever. So he ends up having an encounter with a cop that was dating Allison at the diner. And by the way, the cop refers to him as Mr. Aggravated Manslaughter. And just because I was curious, I looked it up in the state of Illinois. So manslaughter, generally, you get 6 to 28 years. That's the sentencing range. So I'm kind of curious what happened with Corey, but apparently he got off light. He jumps on his motorcycle, and all of a sudden you're in a late 80s music video, which is the song is Come to Me by Johnny Goth, because I Shazammed it because I wanted to find out what was going on there. It's a very strange musical interlude in the middle of this movie. It's just, I don't know. There's a lot in this movie that's super weird.
Well, I can tell you that the whole song selection for this movie is very weird from the get-go with the DJ and the music that he's playing at the beginning of the film. It destroys any sort of Halloween vibe that this movie should have.
Right.
Again, I blame Danny McBride. I get the feeling that the people behind the movie had certain songs that they really loved and that they wanted to put into the movie, regardless of whether or not it worked.
So there's some other problems where the police officer follows him down towards the sewer. He discovers a dead body in a tent. And at that point, as a police officer, his thought is, no, I'm going to follow Corey into the sewer. I'll just deal with this dead body later. Myers kills the guy. And then you actually have this moment where you see Myers go through this regeneration where the power is coming back into him because he's murdered somebody and then he can murder them even more at the afterwards. That's a pretty bizarre scene. Do you guys agree with that?
Yeah, it's kind of goofy.
Yeah, but it fits in with what they're trying to say about evil sustaining Michael Myers. He gets his power and energy from killing people. Okay, then that means it's all supernatural.
Then what's he been doing for the past 4 years? And, why doesn't he have enough power?
Why doesn't he just go out and kill a lot more people and get all his power-ups?
Yeah, exactly. Is he cruising in a 5 to 7% power range and because he hasn't done enough murder?
He needs to plug in overnight.
Corey runs back to the house and he slams Allison up against the wall and then immediately starts asking about Michael Myers. I'm just thinking he has a boyfriend. Some red flags. I'm seeing some red flags here. The physical violence in terms of being pressed against the wall, the obsession with serial killers. I'm thinking that maybe Corey is not boyfriend material. That's my thought watching these scenes.
But Dave, Allison wants to burn this town down and Corey's going to light the match.
Okay.
It's us against the world type of vibe.
Laurie is back at the house and you see the scene of the two of them going upstairs to have sex, which is an exact duplication of what Michael sees in the original Halloween, he's looking through the window and he sees his sister go upstairs. So again, it's a repeated thing and you go, I recognize that. Does the recognition actually translate to quality? And I would say no.
If you're trying to say that Corey's going to become the new Michael Myers doesn't go upstairs to have sex.
Yeah. Right.
So it really just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, he kills his sister after she has the sex, so
exactly.
Come on.
Exactly.
So it shifts to the Dr. Mathis house attack. One of the oddest sequences in the film. Why are they there? Why is Corey there? Why does he bring Michael there? How does he get Michael there? Why are they killing Dr. Mathis and...
Deb. He goes off on a killing spree of people who have wronged him. Or Allison, I guess. Dr. Mathis is a dick and Deb got the promotion when Allison should have.
Because I think Allison mentioned that she didn't get the promotion to Corey.
Yeah. So he's righting wrongs. I want to know why does Deb keep calling Dr. Mathis a man she's Dr. clearly Mathis? Going to have sex with?
As Dr. Mathis.
Yeah. This is so weird.
Yeah. It's kind of funny.
She's out there looking around. Dr. Mathis, Dr. Mathis. And then she turns. And then that's where you see just Corey just going to work on him with a corkscrew. Just out of his neck.
That was pretty good. I have to say that was a good shot. Turning on the light, this guy with a plastic bag around his head, blood everywhere, being stabbed repeatedly by a guy wearing a scarecrow mask.
Why do you put the plastic bag on if you're going to be stabbing it? Because when you stab it, you're going to create an opening in the plastic hole that would allow him to breathe.
You know,
so don't you think you need to pick one of the
two? This is his first time out, like really killing someone for the first time.
He didn't plan it well.
He's really getting his bearings as a serial killer. You know, it's a sort of belt and suspenders approach.
Right. So he's just, yeah. So then my question is, what's the idea of bringing Michael there? Hey, come on in, dude. You can, like, I'll kill one. You kill one. I mean, do they talk about it ahead of time?
Is
he on the back of Corey's bike, motorcycle on the way over there? Is he driving him over there?
Yes, he was. It's classic mentor-mentee. Scenario here. It's like, okay, now I want you to go kill those guys. All right. If you have any trouble, I'll finish them off. Don't worry. Don't worry.
You got this, dude.
Yeah, it was kind of strange. Are they buddies? It's like a buddy serial killer movie.
There's no reason for them to be there at all.
No. And then when this is happening, I'm thinking Corey is anything but your typical slasher where they get hit, but they don't seem to feel the pain. They're calm and methodical. He's very much manic and he gets his hand slammed into the sliding glass door and he screams right. And grabs his hand. So far, it's not going very well trying to emulate Michael Myers.
From here, goes to the radio station and showing the radio towers in Halloween Kills, flashing to the radio tower early in this movie. And then all of a sudden he's up on the radio tower and... After he killed that kid.
After the accident, I'll ride my bike over here and I'd sit up on this roof. And I'd look up at that tower. I wonder if I could climb at the top. I was summoning me. Like a watchtower, a beacon, calling me to live my own life. To be happy again. It always gave me hope, you know, things. Well, maybe somehow things will go back to the way they used to be.
His explanation is that he used to look up at the radio tower and it was like a beacon telling him that everything was going to be all right, which is okay. Maybe this guy's a little fucked in the head, but it's just weird. It's interesting to me because if you look at the sum total of the amount of time that the radio towers were shown in this movie and then what it actually leads to, DJ gets killed and then randomly he sets fire to the metal radio tower, which we'll get to in a minute. I think that they set this whole thing up because he falls off the roof of the radio tower, or he jumps down. And then when he sits up, he does the Myers sit-up, right? He does the Michael Myers sit-up.
Oh, he did.
He's exactly mimicking how Myers brought his body forward at the end of the original Halloween.
I saw this movie twice, and I missed it both times.
Oh, it's 100% there, dude. Just go back and look at it. I mean, okay. That's what they're doing. They're aping the Myers, I don't know what you call it, the Myers sit-up, because I guess.
Michael did that in the sewer, and it was like very clear. How did I totally miss that?
It's actually one of the new national fitness requirements to see how many Myers sit-ups you can do.
Willie the Kid? That guy's just an asshole.
Corey Cunningham. What you doing out here, you ugly motherfucker? I don't know who the fuck you talking to, but I know who you are. Y'all know the Laurie Strode story? She teased a man with brain damage and then he snapped.
Haddonfield is full of them.
Willie the Kid is not somebody that in any way generates a bit of positive empathy for him as a character, so you're perfectly fine when he goes.
Yeah, I'm not really sure the whole radio and DJ storyline.
It's just pointless, right? I mean, it's totally pointless.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was a thread throughout because you hear the DJ throughout, like they get in the car and he's adding exposition and I wouldn't even say exposition. He's adding random, like the boogeyman is out there and other stuff throughout the whole movie. And none of it really works at all.
By the way, what is his show for the other 11 months of the year?
Smooth jazz? Easy. I don't know.
He plays easy listening for the work hours.
Corey breaks into the house and sleeps at the location where he killed the kid because I'm sure that's comfortable, right? If you're feeling mentally unstable, where do you want to go? Oh, hey, how about that location where I killed the kid? I can lay on the puddle of blood that is stained on the wood floor. But I have a question here. This is a legitimate question because I don't understand. Is Lori a hallucination to him at this moment?
I had the same question.
I think she might be. I think she's a hallucination for Corey.
I agree.
Why would she be there?
Right. Why would she be there?
And then she herself later in dialogue references that she talked to Corey's mom. So I assume that that actually means that they're kind of showing what was reality and what was not.
Yeah.
But also the fact that Lori just disappears in a chair that's leaning against the wall.
Yeah.
Corey's having a very rich internal dialogue with himself.
Did Lori, though, I'm trying to think, because she talks about like looking into his eyes later and seeing evil.
She was talking about the shape of evil and get that. But she talks about evil a lot in this movie. She muses about evil.
Thankfully, though, it's not as much as Halloween Kills, right? In terms of evil dies tonight. You don't hear that fucking stupid refrain in this movie, at least. God. So.
Yeah,
that's true.
So in that scene, Corey is talking to Lori and he says, if I can't have her, no one will. I'm thinking that that's another red flag. That would be the sign of somebody that I wouldn't necessarily want dating my daughter. By the way, so he talks to Allison later and he actually says, your grandmother wants to kill me. Like he actually has that line of dialogue to her. Really?
Well, at that point, then you'd think that that was a red flag for Allison. Like, hey, I know we're going to run away together, but wait, what? My grandmother wants to kill you? Yeah. What's going
either
on?
Either you're crazy or...
Do you look at Corey's actions at any point and go, that's boyfriend material?
Didn't you want to run away with him? No.
Lori is holding a paper airplane when she is meeting with Corey. And then later when she's talking to Allison in her house, the whole time that she's having that conversation, she's holding a paper airplane. Why?
I didn't notice that, but that's a great question.
Allison actually at that point, by the way, spins on her mom and says that because of the hysteria you caused, my friends are dead. So again, how is this Laurie Strode's fault?
Yeah.
That is a big problem thematically in this film.
Unless they're talking about Halloween Kills, but still.
But she didn't cause it.
Yeah, she didn't cause it. That's the thing. Blame Tommy Doyle.
Yeah, I was going to say, Tommy Doyle had more to do with that than anyone else.
Yeah, Tommy Doyle stirred up the town. I mean, that's a good point, actually. It's probably Tommy's fault. Corey goes back in the sewer and he decides, I guess, he has fulfilled his Padawan merit badge requirements or whatever, and he's going to go the big time. So then he grabs the Myers mask. And by the way, Michael Myers doesn't put up much of a fight when his mask is taken away.
That was
away.
My question. It took him like 10 seconds to get the Myers. Like, give me that mask. All right, fine.
Exactly. So Myers is this unstoppable supernatural force, and Corey can overpower Michael Myers, but he cannot overpower the band geeks. So.
beautiful.
He lures the band geeks to a junkyard. His motivations in this scene are actually so bizarre, right? So he sticks a drumstick through one kid's eye. He has the mask on. There's a woman that's running from a tow truck. And of course, there's a long stretch where you could make a left or a right and run in between cars. She doesn't choose to do that. She just keeps going straight for the fence and then gets run over. I think all of this is super clunky. That's what I would say about the junkyard scene. I think it's strange and not terribly effective.
They need to get the kill count up. It was very typical horror movie kind of stuff.
That's what this and the Dr. Mathis scene felt like to me. But then even then, they don't really show you the kills in either one of those situations for the most part. It's not as gratuitous as what you saw like with the 2018 head stomp or even a bunch of the stuff in Kills, like the light bulb to the throat, etc.
I liked the acetylene torch to the mouth. That was nice.
Good.
By the way, right. If you're going to like kill someone by using an acetylene torch in their mouth, transformation complete.
He goes back to the radio station. The great thing about this scene is that he walks into the lobby of the radio station basically as Michael Myers, right? You can't tell me that everybody in this town doesn't know exactly what Michael Myers looks like. And the woman who's behind the counter looks at him and says, "Can I help you?" Like, just casually.
I know. It was like,
what the fuck, man? Like, aren't you like running out the back door of the radio station and saying, "Fuck this, I'll let the cops figure it out," right? I mean, come on.
Yeah, it does not make any sense. You're setting it up like the whole town is traumatized, and then she's, "Hey, who are you?"
Willie gets killed, and then there's a big moment where he cuts off Willie's tongue. To cut off that amount of tongue, that has to be like a Gene Simmons-sized tongue, right? It has to be really long because it's way out there when he chops it off. Yeah. Whatever. I mean, it just seems gratuitous and kind of stupid, honestly. Like, even from a 80s horror vibe or whatever, I don't think it's actually all that great, honestly. I think it's just dumb.
Because he talks a lot. He's cutting out the tongue. I think Terry's the guy, the big mouth. He's the one getting the welding torch in the mouth.
Dumb people shut up, you know, or that kind of thing.
Well, yeah, getting your head smashed into the countertop. And then when he comes back and like his teeth are like all falling out. That was gross. I mean, that was gross. And then having your tongue cut off. It was pretty...
It's slightly gross. And yes, the tongue going around on the turntable. That was kind of funny. Really feel like they wanted to potentially tell a different story. But then they were like, oh, we got to have the Halloween angle. We got to have the Michael Myers thing. We got to close it out with Laurie. This movie is 150 minutes.
An hour 50.
And was it?
1 hour 50. You said 150 minutes, which would be
2:30. Oh, okay. Sorry. Yes, thank you. An hour and 50 minutes.
I'm now watching 2 hours, 30 minutes of this crap.
You don't have Laurie and Michael coming together to fight each other until the hour and 33 minute mark. I can understand why people might be frustrated or creating petitions online to reshoot the end of this film. But there's a bunch of stuff about the end showdown that's actually really weird. She goes upstairs and she pretends that she is going to commit suicide. She shoots a pumpkin. But my question about this moment is, how does she know that somebody else is in the house? Michael or somebody pretending to be Michael is there.
She doesn't even have Simply Safe.
None of this is earned, but she says she knew Corey was going to come and try to kill her.
Yeah.
So she looked into his eyes. Again, I don't know how she got that.
But it's not supernatural. We'll agree to that, right? So.
Well, kind of is, kind of not.
Yeah, so fucking pick a lane.
She's got mental abilities. She's like a Professor X.
So she shoots Corey. He falls off the railing because everybody falls off a railing in a Halloween movie. So she shoots him twice. She goes downstairs. And then she chooses to shoot the other two bullets into the wall. Why?
Was she setting him up because she wanted to like finish him off? That didn't make much sense at all.
I honestly can't even understand why would she do that. I just don't get it.
Who is she, Bud White? I mean, but that's exactly. That's what it seemed like, right?
It did. It did.
I mean, Bud White emptying his revolver in the beginning of LA Confidential.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. But then he stabs himself in the neck, and then she's shocked by that.
That whole sequence is really it doesn't work at all. I mean, I think it's a failure.
Yeah. By the way. Have people not learned from watching movies that if somebody like kills themselves or there's a body lying on the ground with a knife sticking in them, you're not supposed to grab it, putting your fingerprints on the weapon and then take it out because somebody's going to walk in right at that moment and go like,
right.
You killed them.
The end of Corey is, well, let me say Corey in general is clunky. The end of Corey is especially clunky. Don't think it works. And the other thing, by the way, is Corey's laying there and there's blood dripping out of his neck. Anybody heard of the concept of direct pressure?
I don't think they wanted it.
I don't think that was going to help. Seriously, you just suck an 8-inch chef's knife into his neck. He's not coming back from that. I need a trauma surgeon. I need a vascular surgeon.
So let me ask you this. So it does briefly cut back to the radio tower being on fire. What did Corey do there? Did he crawl up on the radio tower and put some things that could burn and then put an accelerant and then light them on fire? Did he do all of that before he went over to Laurie's house?
I don't know.
How do you set a metal radio tower on fire? I need to know. Somebody answer that question for me.
Maybe you just do a Molotov cocktail or something. Just like...
It would dissipate too quickly.
I don't know.
I don't know. You're asking too many good questions, Dave.
Oh, yeah. I have many questions about this. And then, of course, it comes down to the final showdown. Again, there's so much of this that is just referencing earlier Halloween films. You know, she's hiding in a closet this time, and then she jumps out of that closet to attack him. Hour and 50 minutes. Their entire showdown is 5 minutes of this movie, which I think is kind of interesting. I do, however, appreciate the thoroughness that she uses in terms of delivering the coup de grace to him, right? Gets him pinned on the...
butcher block.
Thank you, the butcher block. And then cuts his throat and then also slices open his veins. But then she stabs him like under the armpit. I forget what that move is. That's like a special forces move to kill somebody.
So she's been reading up on like the Mossad and how they killed people. And she's been doing research.
She's remarkably thorough. And here's the thing. I would say from like a cathartic standpoint, a satisfaction standpoint, I think that that's pretty good. I do like that. The crazy thing, though, is that she references that, you know, you're only a man. And that gets referenced earlier in the film as well. But Halloween Kills took it in this direction of him being this supernatural force. And even the original 2018 Halloween, right, when he's in the courtyard, that says there's something supernatural. So it's interesting to me that they bounce it all the way back to say, no, you're just a man and we can cut you up and you're done.
Unfortunately, he gave too much of his evil mojo to Corey. He was not at full strength.
Yeah, one thing about the fight, though, that it makes me question if it's a comedy or not. They're sticking their hand in the garbage disposal and turning it on. Make something out of a naked gun.
Next thing you know, she's going to throw a towel on his face.
Oh, my God.
A pillow.
Seems a garbage disposal. Like, that's going to... Oh, my God.
All this leads to the very best and worst part of this movie, which is...
Oh, my God.
All of a sudden, there's a parade of the entire town of Haddonfield. What social media platforms did they put out the idea that, hey, we're taking Michael Myers and we're going to go drop him in the grinder up at the old junkyard. Hey, does anybody want to tag along and just check it out, right?
I had the same question. It was like, did they use Twitter to get the word out?
Yeah, how did you rally?
They go from this altercation in her kitchen to...
Flash mob.
Yeah, exactly. Like a huge parade of people. And by the way, holy fuck. So the sheriff shows up again. I can't tell you. And I may pull my own clips from the previous pods about this sheriff. But right before this, there's a quick moment where I think the sheriff is actually meeting with Dr. Sartain. So Sartain's been shot, so he's in the hospital. You hear the sheriff say,
take a look at this list. Most of them, minor offenders, mental patients. One stuck out. A2201 is Michael Myers. Babysitter murders, 1978. 40 years to this day.
Michael Myers loose with a bunch of nutbags in Haddonfield on Halloween night? We want to have a fucking circus on our hands. But hey, what are we going to do? Cancel Halloween?
How did this sheriff ever get elected? I mean, what is this guy's motivation? He's the worst law enforcement officer I think I've ever seen in a movie. I may actually have an obsessive problem where I have to get to David Gordon Green or Danny McBride or somebody and just have them explain to me, what were you thinking was the purpose of the sheriff character? So strange. And then, by the way, you have everybody show up for Myers' final moment of destruction. And there's Julian from 2018. So the kid that was being babysit, he was one of the best parts of 2018. So good to see Julian again.
Yeah. Okay.
And then you also randomly have the woman. So, and she was the one that was involved in the parking lot altercation earlier. So she had a light bulb shoved through her throat and she was stabbed, yet somehow she survives. Why do you have that character survive from Halloween Kills? What's the point of that?
Though she was the sister that, so the woman who accosted Lori at the outside the grocery store.
So you need her to survive just to have the narrative that that Lori was somehow responsible for all this.
Yep.
And then in one of the finest moments in horror movie history, the body of Michael Myers crowd surfs its way to the metal grinder, which is, I mean, you just like at this point when you're watching this movie, you're like, could this fucking get any more bizarre? But whatever.
Didn't the Iranians do the same thing with Khomeini when he died? Like his body was crowd surfed to...
I think it was a coffin, right? A little different.
It's kind of funny because they like, we're ending this. We are going to destroy this body. There's no way you're coming back from this. This is it.
I think this movie is, in a lot of ways, kind of interesting, kind of a shit show. But I do think the last part with Myers' body getting ground into little pieces, honestly, it's a revelation. Because if you look at all of the previous movies, right? And I actually, and this is all from memory, right? So Halloween 1... shot 6 times, stabbed with a knife, stabbed with a needle, fell off a balcony, kept going. Halloween 2, shot in both eyes, blown up, survived. Halloween 4, shot like 50 times, thrown down a well, blown up with dynamite, survives, Halloween 5, tranquilizer darts. Halloween H2O, he was actually decapitated, and they retconned that one. You know, Halloween 2018, shot, stabbed, burned in the bottom of a basement. And then in Halloween Kills, I don't know exactly what happened in the crowd scene, but somebody had a hockey stick and somebody had an iron. So I assume that somebody hit him with a hockey stick and maybe he was ironed lightly, but whatever.
In the end of Halloween Kills, he took a beating.
Oh, yeah. He took a beating.
Right.
Yeah.
So, but in this case, you put him through the equivalent of a grinder, and I don't think he's coming back. So I think this is the way of this crew that was making these trilogy of films saying, in our universe, Myers is really and truly gone, because I don't think he can come back from, I mean, what are you going to have, like a small pile of hamburger limping its way through the coming at you?
It's going to be like 100 little ashes that all get together.
That's a much better movie.
Well, I was going to ask you if you were expecting like a lightning bolt to come down and strike his body as he's going through the crusher.
No, that would be Friday the 13th part 6.
Oh,
just
right.
To be okay, clear there. Okay. Yes.
You know what's going to happen? You're going to get young Dr. Hammond is going to collect a little bit of his good DNA. We can clone him.
I would recommend for anybody who's a Halloween fan, there are a couple of books out there. So Taking Shape and Taking Shape 2 that goes through an exhaustive history of the development of these movies and some undeveloped sequels. And the undeveloped sequels book I thought was really interesting because they had all these scenarios where Michael was fighting Pinhead, Michael was fighting Jason, et cetera, et cetera. So they were really reaching for things at some points during the sequels. And then this movie ends and it's just a series of shots without Michael's breathing where it's Laurie's house, et cetera. So it's trying to kind of reflect on the end of the original Halloween, which is super effective, right? Because you see all the places that Myers was during the course of the movie and he has the heavy breathing. So, but I don't know. I mean, I guess we can move to closing thoughts. So let me ask you this. Of the new Halloween trilogy, how would you guys rank these three movies, the new ones?
I would consider there's only one in the trilogy. Watch the first one and then call it a day.
How would you rank Kills versus Ends? I'm curious.
Oh, that's so hard. Ends is probably like a slightly better movie, but it's not that interesting. It's kind of boring. Whereas yeah. Kills is like a crazy movie. At least it's got a lot of fun stuff going on. A lot more Michael Myers in it, a lot more like kind of kills and Big John, Little John's fun. There's a lot of like kind of fun scenes in it and stuff. It's like wacky. It's all Get Out, but this one has none of that kind of fun stuff. Just in order, Halloween, Kills, Ends, and just goes downhill.
I concur with Marcus. I mean, Halloween 2018 is a good movie. The other two should never have been made, but Kills is probably a little more fun than this. This is boring.
I think this is a better movie than Kills, honestly, because I think Halloween Kills is just Friday the 13th with Michael Myers playing the Jason character for the most part. So I would say that Kills is more fun as a movie and potentially more entertaining. I think Halloween Ends is a better movie, and I do think that at the very least they were trying something different. The idea of trying to go somewhere and say, okay, this idea that the shape and this idea that evil can consume you and all that kind of stuff, I think is interesting. I just think that it didn't deliver in terms of what actually translated to the screen.
Do this. Take Halloween Ends and cut out the middle part and do the first scene and the final scene and knit them together and boom. You got a nice 20-minute movie and you got closure and boom.
I guess my question really is, you know, and I referenced the Star Wars, the new Star Wars trilogy as an example of where they didn't have a coherent arc in place in terms of all three movies. I really do feel like Halloween 2018 was a one-off and then it made a shit ton of money and they said, okay, we'll make two more. And then I think they were kind of floundering around a little bit in terms of trying to figure it out. If you take this concept, the idea that Michael Myers is actually a personification of evil that could somehow inhabit somebody else and maybe you could take it into a different direction, that to me all could be actually kind of interesting and compelling. Hopefully the 2018 version to here, you know, puts a final wrap on the Michael Myers storyline, because I don't know that you can actually go back to it at this point, or you'd have to completely reboot it in an entirely different universe.
You can't keep this one going.
You mean like in the MCU? That would be interesting.
No, it would be the MMCU, Michael Myers Cinematic Universe.
Yeah, I'm done with that one.
Yeah.
I don't know. I honestly think the writers, again, four writers credited on Halloween Ends.
And I think they all had stuff that was on the screen.
That makes for an incoherent movie. And the fact that they decided that they would like write these movies at the same time in parallel, but different writers writing them, but sort of given a little bit of a, here's what we kind of want, we want to see. Not in terms of the story structure, but just sort of like a theme. And then having them go off and write it, which is why they seem like very different movies. The idea that he says like, oh, well, we just tried a lot of different things and decided, you know, on the fly to use what worked. That's not a good strategy when like writing a movie. Yeah. I'm sorry.
You know what works better? Plan it out. Have a plan.
Right.
Write a really good script. And then when you're filming, then make some changes to see like what works better.
Yeah.
But you got to have a solid foundation, and they did not have a solid foundation. I mean, Ends, I think, was more of a solid foundation. Like, there was a kernel there. Coulda, maybe worked. I don't buy into this whole storyline. I don't connect with it. But it probably could have worked if it had better writing and maybe a better acting.
But then why'd they kill off Corey, too, if they wanted to possibly have him continue? Like, that's another weird
thing. That was my question. Like, why is Corey dying?
Yeah.
So Bill Tiller was actually talking about this when he was breaking down the mythology, and he was talking about the fact that in the original Halloween, the gravekeeper mentions that there was this person in, 68 and this person in 74, whatever it was, that, went crazy and killed their family. So the idea that there could be this
malevolent spirit, yeah.
You could actually really do something with that would be interesting. But the crazy thing about this whole 12-movie journey is, go back to what Carpenter was doing with the original Halloween. It was just some dude with no motive who was a maniac, right? And that's what makes the first movie so effective. There is no grander plan. There is no motive. It's just a fucking nut job wearing a mask who's out killing people, and that's why it's effective. Trying to stretch that mythology into what is now 12 movies, I get, becomes difficult.
That's the irony. You're right, because it's like it should be one film, and then it's now become how many films? Like 12 films? Right?
12.
12 films. You have to create this mythology. And yet what makes it so great is that there is no mythology.
It's what makes the first one so powerful. Yeah. That, the score, obviously, the tension, Dean Koondé's amazing photography. I mean, all those things come together in the first one. I mean, the first one's a fucking masterpiece. It's, I will say, for me personally, remains scariest movie ever made. It'll never be topped. I guess maybe that's the problem, is you can't, it's difficult to chase a masterpiece, is what it comes down to, right? It's why there is not a Godfather, well, I'd even put the three in there, maybe 4 through 9, right? And that's why those movies don't exist today, because nobody should make those movies.
The Shining 2, actually, Dr. Sleep.
Dr. Sleep was actually a pretty good movie, and a pretty decent book, surprisingly.
You have a talented author who is like extending it and gave it a lot of thought and effort.
Right.
And wrote it first.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that's the fucking crazy thing. You read all the interviews, right? I mean, Carpenter sold his rights to Halloween, I think, before, was it Halloween 4 showed up? I can't remember the exact timeline, but he was totally out of it. And then they brought him back to do the music and other stuff. He did not envision this idea that Halloween was going to be an ongoing saga other than the first film. And his idea was that, hey, let's just make an anthology and let's tell a scary story every Halloween and let's have it be a different person or, different protagonist.
Yeah.
I think history will show that he probably was right. That's what it should have been. And that way would have been a lot more interesting.
I mean, I am a huge Halloween fan. I think that the first one, and I do think the second one is, or, the second best film in the entire series, because it just, has the same style, Dean Koondé's back with the lighting and all that kind of stuff. I think the continuation is good. But then everything after that is kind of like, okay. All right. Any other closing thoughts you guys want to have for Halloween Ends? Marcus.
Not really. It's disappointing. I think the big question I had coming in is what's out the window. They never addressed that at any point.
Yeah.
Kind of annoying because they focus so much on the window in Halloween Kills. I guess the answer is Haddonfield. He's just looking out at the town, since that's what they focused on mostly in this one. But overall, I think...
And by the way, I think in a previous pod, we corrected you and it's Haddonfield, not Haddonfield.
I learned that I wasn't positive before about the Haddonfield police, but this one that cemented that do not go to Haddonfield.
You mean Haddonfield?
Haddonfield? What's it called?
Haddonfield, not Haddonfield.
Whatever.
Sorry.
I'm impressed with the fire department is a much, much faster responder than the police department in Haddonfield.
Yes, they were.
And once again, Marcus, it is Haddonfield, not Haddonfield.
Haddonfield. I thought I fixed it that time. Damn it.
Well, though I will say I was a little sort of confused.
Haddonfield.
I was a little sort of
Haddonfield.
Just keep saying that every like 30 seconds.
Yeah, exactly. Right, they're talking about, oh, he's looking at Haddonfield. No, he's not looking at anything. Oh, it's a plain town.
Is he looking at Haddonfield by chance?
Fuck, he's looking at Haddonfield.
Whatever. Haddonfield. Yeah, overall, just really disappointing. I don't think much of the movie works. I'm not sure what message they were trying to send. I'm glad they finally pulverized Michael that he cannot come back. And hopefully we won't have to see another one of these. I'll give it a C- because I did like the opening scene. I thought that was well done. Colin.
I think we know where I stand on this movie.
You get a letter grade?
Do you want a letter grade? I hadn't thought sure, about yeah. it, but I'll probably give it a D. D+. D+ for that first scene. And maybe for some Michael Myers sausage.
I'll probably just give it a solid C or maybe even a C+, just because wow, I do that's think really that good. The dark humor of pulverizing the Myers body at the end, after sitting through the rest of it, that I did find very satisfying.
Well, explain what you mean by dark humor, because I think of it as this is what everyone wants to do, what everyone's yelling at the screen at the end of these movies. Don't leave his body there. You think you killed him. Chop him up into little pieces. And this is exactly what they do. They're like, fuck this. We're going to make sure that this is 100%. He is dead and not coming back.
So the reason why I think this is funny, Bill Tiller and I have had multiple discussions, arguments about Halloween. And I always said that as soon as the guy goes down, assume it's that crowd scene in Halloween Kills where everybody's around him, just take a chainsaw. You can start by cutting off his legs. What's he going to do? He's going to, you know, raise up on his arms and be like, you know, pushing himself around the street. And everyone's just laughing at him. It's like, oh, there's Michael Myers. And then you cut off his arms. I mean, you could turn him into a urinal if you wanted to, right? To wait for the town to get revenge. I mean, there are some options here.
The humor just got really dark.
Am I the only one that has those? Am I the only one that has those particular thoughts? If you eliminate his mobility, you eliminate the threat. That's my point.
Yes. Absolutely. And so this was, so I appreciated the way in which they dispatched his body.
That was fun.
It wasn't enough to completely drain his body of blood by slitting not only his throat, but also his wrists. It's like, make sure
that
we're doing the job right. And then, well, let's take his body to the crusher, which they've, by the way, foreshadowed in the beginning
with the metal crusher. I was like,
that's going to come into play somehow.
Oh, yeah. I think we can close the book on Halloween Ends. By the way, we do have two previous podcasts we have done podcasts for the entire Gordon Green trilogy. So recommend you go back and listen to Halloween 2018 and Halloween Kills, because those are actually pretty fun podcasts. We have a good time.
And we've also done the Rob Zombie Halloween.
We have done the Rob Zombie Halloween. Yep.
Sorry, most we are, talked about subject.
We are in the Halloween universe. And going forward, we'll see where we end up as a podcast. We're still going to be doing random shit here and there. We'll figure it out. If you have any recommendations, feel free to contact us on Twitter or send us an email.
feedback@realdmc.com.
Coming up next, I'll be leading a series of podcasts focused on costume dramas.
who are you going to find to actually do those with you?
I bet my mom would like to do
solo pods.
At least I got Bill Tiller to ride shotgun with me on all my horror shit, so we'll figure it out. Well, hope you enjoyed our
very long
rambling conversation about Halloween Ends. I don't know, we were terribly complimentary, but shit happens, and it's probably an accurate reflection of the movie itself. With that, we'll say this is the Real DMC Podcast. Signing off. Goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye.
I was waiting for Colin to show your tits line.
No, I'll leave that to somebody else.
Evil is not Michael Myers, so it's not necessarily Michael Myers. Like, Michael Myers was around like one night for everyone. That's the small town Haddonfield again.